The title of my talk today is Letting Go of Lack. And the inspiration for this talk came from a statement of truth from the founder of the Unity Church, Charles Fillmore, who said that there is no reality in lack. Abundance is manifest here and now, awaiting our awareness of it. Let me say that again. There is no reality in lack. Abundance is manifest here and now, awaiting our awareness of it. Now, what I know is that when we hear a statement like that, there is usually something that resonates within us and say, yes, I know deep in my heart that's true, but that certainly doesn't seem always to be my daily experience of life. And so what I want to do today is to explore this statement in a way that we can really begin to embody the truth that was spoken here by Charles Fillmore so that it truly does become our experience of life. And one of the ways that I would like to go about this is by exploring a number of terms contained within that statement and perhaps to see how these terms relate in a way that perhaps is new and different for us all. And so the very first term that I want to explore here is this word, lack. And as I often do, I generally go to the dictionary whenever I begin the exploration of some subject. And so the dictionary definition of the word lack is that it is a deficiency or absence, a want. And some of the synonyms for lack are scarcity, deficit, insufficiency, and need. And that the core meaning of lack is to be without what is needed. And so as that word need began to repeat itself throughout this definition, I came to realize that in order to truly understand the nature of lack, I also had to understand the nature of need. So I looked up that word as well. And the dictionary tells us that a need is a lack of something necessary or desirable. And as soon as I heard or saw the word desirable, I realized that I was dealing with something that exists in the future. Because our desires are what we hope will happen in the future. And I also began to realize that lack is an experience of the past. And that is because we are never, ever truly aware of lack until it has actually happened to us. Even if it's only an instant after it happened, that we never truly have the experience of lack until it has actually happened. So, for example, you cannot say that you don't have enough money to pay the rent at the end of the month until the end of the month arrives. Between now and the end of the month, you would say, I need some money to pay for the rent at the end of the month. So the lack doesn't occur until it actually happens, until the end of the month actually comes and you don't have the money, then you have an experience of lack. Until then, it is a need. So this is an important relationship, you see, because believing that there will be lack in the future creates the experience of having a need. And need is just another word for wishing, for wanting, for hoping, for desiring. But that need is always a mental experience that lives in the future. That need could be defined as the fear of future lack. And what I have come to realize in myself and in the many people that I've worked with is that the greater and the deeper your belief in lack, the greater your future needs will be. The more experience you've had with lack in the past, the more your needs will seem to be in the future. And what is interesting is the way that humanity has always dealt with their fear of future lack or dealt with their needs. And the way that we've dealt with need is through acquisition. Our tendency to acquire things that we think we might need in the future. But what happens, you see, is that your imagination will always outpace your holdings. That your fear of future lack will always be greater than your ability to fulfill it. Consequently, as long as we're working in the realm of imagination centered on a belief in lack, there will never be enough in the future. No matter how much we get, it will never seem like it's enough, that we always need more. And so, I mean, we can look at this in a practical sense, is that, you know, that our houses are probably full of all kinds of things that we don't really need, but we keep them around thinking, I might need them in the future. That we create some imaginary experience, and that is because we have projected our experience of lack that's happened in the past off into the future. So we tend to acquire lots of things that sometimes we don't even need in an attempt to meet this imaginary obligation in the future. And so this is one of the difficulties that comes up in this area, because the way that we deal with lack and with need is by placing our faith in forms that can fade away. So, consequently, when we place our faith in something that can change, that there will always be fear and anxiety. So if our faith is placed in the stock market, or in our investments, that these are things that can always change. And so we start to worry about inflation and interest rates and all of these different things, and what happens if so-and-so gets elected or whatever. And so these are all things that can change, and when our faith is placed in those things, there will always be fear. And so this is why Jesus said in the book of Matthew, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now, I'm sure probably everyone here has heard that passage on one occasion or another, or something similar to it. And what has so often happened is that it has been misinterpreted to believe that somehow our treasures are in heaven, and that when we die and finally go to heaven, that that's when our good will come. But nothing could be further from the truth, because our heaven is here and now. And this is also what Jesus explained, that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He wouldn't have said that if he didn't mean it. And when something is at hand, it means it's right here, right now, available to us. You see, and that is because the term treasures in heaven, what that really means is a consciousness of abundance. Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. He's really saying build for yourself a consciousness of abundance. You see, because we cannot release our belief in lack until we have fully committed ourselves to the principle of abundance, until we have fully committed ourselves to a consciousness or an awareness of abundance as the truth of our life. So this is the next word or principle that I want to explore here. And in looking up that word abundance, the definition is a plentiful amount, fullness to overflowing, affluence. And some of the synonyms are prosperity, ease, well-being, riches, and wealth. And one of the things that I know about abundance is that I'm sure that we can all agree that abundance is a good thing. Emma Curtis Hopkins, one of the mentors of the New Thought philosophy, once said that God is the good that we can all agree on. And if we can all agree that abundance is a good thing, then it follows that God is abundance. That infinite abundance is the nature of the divine, or God. And that what we call good in our lives is merely the human experience of the infinite or yet unformed good, which is God. And the important thing to recognize about God in terms of what we teach in religious science is that God is the good to which there is no opposite. That there is only one life, and that life is God, and there is no opposite or other life than God. Whereas the experience of good in our day-to-day life often seems to be opposed by some other force that keeps it from happening. Hence, we have this concept in human consciousness of good and evil, this concept of a duality of two opposing forces. And as Ernest Holmes explains over and over and over throughout his teaching, that it is always thinking in duality that keeps us in lack and limitation and in suffering. So consequently, we have to transcend this mode of thinking, this thinking in terms of good and evil or there being two forces. And so the key to this whole thing is understanding that lack is not the opposite of abundance, that lack is what we have imagined it would be like if God were not abundant. Lack is what we have imagined it would be like if God were not abundant. And since God is all there is, since God is omnipresence, and if God is abundance, then abundance must be omnipresent. That there can be no absence of abundance anywhere. The only thing that blocks it from our experience of life is our belief in lack. It goes back to the basis of our teaching, that as you believe, so it shall be done unto you. And if you believe in lack based on your past experience, that belief will cause you to have a lack of awareness of the abundance that is already available to you. So you could say that lack is a false belief regarding the abundant nature of God. Because in truth, there is no force, there is no power in this universe that opposes abundance. That lack is merely the belief in not enough abundance. And when there is enough abundance, which is that spiritual quality, within our consciousness, within our experience of life, what we tend to call it is wealth. That wealth is the consciousness of abundance. This is a wonderful statement that I came across from Swami Kriyananda, also known as Donald Walters, who was one of the primary devotees of the late Yogananda. That wealth is the consciousness of abundance. That wealth is the human experience of the spiritual principle of abundance. But I have a definition that I like even better. And that comes from my own exploration where I looked into the etymology or the history of this word wealth. And the originating meaning behind the word wealth is well-being. That wealth is well-being in the body of our affairs. In the same sense that health is well-being within our physical flesh body, wealth is well-being within the body of our affairs. And I think that this is really important because one of the things that often happens is that when we go to the dictionary definition of wealth, which is abundance of material possessions or resources or riches, that oftentimes people who are drawn to a spiritual way of life tend to somehow recoil a little bit when they hear talk about material possessions and so forth, trying to overcome that tendency to acquisitiveness. But yet I know that people who are drawn to spiritual life when it comes time to pay their bills are very interested in material possessions, especially with money. And what's important to recognize is, getting back to this idea of unity and oneness, that there are not two worlds. There's not a spiritual world on the one hand and a material world on the other, that the two worlds are really one world, that we live in a world that is both spiritual and material in nature. It is the great paradox of life. And it is the spiritual world that nourishes the material world, that provides all that we experience in the material world, that the material world is here simply to show us what we believe about the spiritual world. And if we experience lack in the material world, it's only because we believe falsely that there is some form of lack in the spiritual world, and that is not the truth. So, the whole thing that that comes up now is how do we transform our belief in lack into an awareness of abundance or a consciousness of abundance? How do we make that transformation? What is the key that allows us to make that shift? And that is the last principle that I want to talk about here, which is the principle of gratitude. That gratitude is the very activity that transforms lack into abundance. I mean, think about it in this way. What happens to you? How do you feel when your needs are met? We probably don't pay too much attention in all the little things, but when we have some big need that we want to have met, which might be some big hope or dream or so forth, when something good comes into our life and a need is met, our natural response is to feel joyful, to feel grateful, to have a sense of gratitude when our good finally arrives, when our need has been met. But this is where the great illusion comes in, you see, because our tendency is to think that the feelings of gratitude have come from our need being met. That whatever that is, whatever that prize is that has come into our life, our tendency is to think that it has made us feel grateful. But the greater truth is that our hidden feelings create the conditions of our life. And it was the gratitude within us that created the need being met. That gratitude is formless, yet it has the ability to formulate conditions and circumstances in our life. So what happens, and how we get caught in this illusion, is that the manifestation and the feeling that created it arise at the same time. And our tendency is to think the condition created the feeling. But it's the other way around. Ernest Holmes, in Living the Science of Mind, said that feeling, organized and directed, is intelligent creation. You see, we all have these grand ideas at the mental level of our being. We all have these thoughts and ideas and so forth about the way that we would like things to be. But then our physical reality of life doesn't match what our ideas are. And the reason is, in between, hidden within our feelings, are the obstructions. And it's gratitude, the feelings of gratitude that we bring forth that produces new conditions and circumstances in our life. And we could go back to that scripture that I read earlier from Jesus. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And what he is saying is, where your good is, there will your feelings be also. That our feelings and conditions are coexistent, that they arise almost simultaneously. And so we tend to think the conditions create the feelings, and when we do that, we become dependent on outer conditions in order to feel good. And to feel good is to feel God. So one of the best little stories that I can remember that explains this principle so clearly comes from the Vedic tradition, and it was a story about a time when Lord Krishna had come down to sit with his devotees and to answer questions for them. And so what happened was that one of his devotees, one of these monks, came up and said, Oh, mighty Lord Krishna, I meditate 4 hours a day and I bathe in the holy river every day. How much longer will it be before I become enlightened? Krishna thought for a moment and said, at least several lifetimes. And oh, that monk was so disappointed, and he walked away with his head hanging down and all stooped over. He was so disappointed. Several more lifetimes. And the next monk came up and said, Lord Krishna, I meditate 8 hours a day, and twice a day I bathe in the holy Ganges. How much longer before I become enlightened? Krishna looked at him and said, 2 more lifetimes. And oh, he was so disappointed and sulked away. And so this went on. One after another came up, and it was 5 lifetimes, 10 lifetimes, 15, and all of them were so disappointed. And then finally, out of nowhere, came this beggar who showed up, who must have snuck into the room. And everyone was aghast. Who is this infidel who's come before Krishna? And so this thief looked up at Krishna and said, "Oh, mighty Lord Krishna, I'm just a humble beggar and a thief, and I don't know how to meditate, and the only time I go in the river is when someone pushes me in. Is there any chance at all that I could ever become enlightened?" And Krishna looked at him and thought for a moment, said, "Yes, you too can become enlightened, but it will take 1,000 lifetimes." And with that, the thief threw himself down onto the ground and began to kiss the feet of Krishna and said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for just allowing me the chance to become enlightened." And in that moment, Krishna reached down and touched his head and he became enlightened. You see, because that thief had something that all the others didn't have. He had a grateful heart. See, because gratitude is our awareness of our oneness with God. That his gratitude was his enlightenment. And what happened, you see, is all the other monks had a lack of gratitude. And it was that lack that pushed their enlightenment off into the future. That they created the need for many lives out of a lack of gratitude in the moment. So it was like gratitude that collapsed 1,000 lifetimes into a moment, into the eternal presence of God. I mean, that's the principle behind this story. Because the law of gratitude is very simple, that whatever you are grateful for will increase. And that when you live in gratitude, you live in grace. I mean, what else would you call it when every need that you have is met the moment that it arises, so that you don't even see it as a need? It's known as living in grace. And that's because the Father knows of your needs before you do. And that the Mother manifests the fulfillment of those needs as they arise. So that when we live in the grace of the Mother, Father, God, that we don't even experience needs as needs. We just experience the ongoingness of life in this realm of time and space. Good flows into our life as it is necessary. And the way that we do this is by staying in this consciousness of gratitude, to live in the principle of grace. And that's why simple little practices that a lot of metaphysical people tend to think is a little old-fashioned, like saying grace before a meal, is a spiritual practice. That it's so much easier to be grateful for a plate that's full than to try and to manifest a meal by drumming up those feelings of gratitude. So it's learning how to be grateful for all of the little things that we already have, and that whatever you are grateful for will expand. So that every time you go through the checkout stand in the grocery store and you open your wallet and you see that money, to give thanks to God for providing you with the means to have whatever it is that you need in the moment to fulfill your every need. So, in conclusion, I just want to go back to this original statement from Charles Fillmore. There is no reality in lack. Abundance is manifest here and now, awaiting my awareness of it. So that what we have learned here is that lack is what we have imagined it would be like if God were not abundance. But since God is abundance and God is all there is no absence of abundance anywhere, except to the degree that we believe it is so. And it is our belief in lack that is blocking our awareness of oneness. And that as we release that belief in lack, that our awareness of God as abundance simply begins to expand. Because the abundance of God is already present, awaiting our awareness of it. And the key to awakening that awareness is gratitude. And it is gratitude that keeps us in grace. So, what I would like to do in lieu of a healing treatment here is to invite you to participate with me in a prayer process that we can do here today and that you can take from this place to begin to embody the principles that I talked about here, because my just speaking them is helpful to some degree, but if it just stays in your head, it's not going to change your life very much. That it has to come to live in your body. I often have people who come to me for counseling and with some problem, and as I begin to explain the principles of truth, they say, oh, I already know that. And I very lovingly have to explain to them, oh, no, you don't. Because if you knew that, you wouldn't be here. Because, you see, our life is a demonstration, a manifestation of what we know. Of what we know, what's in our heart. And so one of the ways that we can begin to embody this is by using a tool that I have been working a lot with and been developing that I call posture prayers. And there's a little handout in your bulletin here that says the letting go of lack prayer. And at the top of it is this statement by Swami Kriyananda, wealth is the consciousness of abundance and poverty is the consciousness of lack. And there's some extra copies in the back there if you don't have one of these. And so what I would like to do is to invite you to participate in this and do this by having everybody stand up. Now, this idea of the posture prayer is based on the principle that what the body does, the soul remembers. And what the soul remembers, it does to the body. And not just our physical body, but also the body of our affairs, because the soul has a universal nature, and it expresses itself through our physical body and through the body of our affairs, our relationships in the world. And so what has been known down through the ages in many of the highest esoteric teachings is the fact that there are certain postures in which you can hold your body that create feeling. And going back to this idea of Ernest Holmes, that consciously directed feeling is intelligent creation. And so it's about attaching feelings to the words of truth that we speak. So they're not just an intellectual concept that we're speaking, but there's actually a feeling that goes with this. And so the first stage of this, of these postures, the first is the beginning posture, which is this, what I call the acceptance posture, which is bringing things in and bringing things into your heart and holding it in your heart. And it's also, we might call it the I am posture. And then we're going to be using this idea of releasing or letting go. And one of the ways you can imagine this, if anyone ever watches David Letterman, when he takes his questions from the audience and he lets them go, they let him fly, releasing. And for most of us, the past tends to be on the left, the future on the right. And so we're going to be releasing the past, we're going to be releasing the future, and then taking the past and the future, returning it to the universal, to God. And so when you stand there, throw up your hands, throw your heads back, and try and frown. You can hardly do that. It changes the way that you feel. When people are happy, they throw up their hands in joy. And this is the idea, is to invoke that feeling of joy or gratitude. And then we bring that back down into our heart as the principle of abundance in the form of a human experience, which is wealth. So those are the postures that we do in this prayer. Now, the other thing that the soul loves is harmony. It loves rhymes, cadence, anything like that. And so what I usually try to do is to add some melody or harmony to this, so we turn these into like little chants, because that helps us to embody, to remember this. I mean, for example, when I say, Old MacDonald had a farm, what immediately comes into your mind after all these years? E-I-E-I-O, we all, because we know it by heart. It's alive in us. And so if all we know about truth is what's written down in our notes in the drawer somewhere, it's not going to do us very good. It has to literally be alive in us as a feeling, as a remembered response to conditions. And so the way to use this prayer, we're going to practice a little bit here today, but it's to take it home. If you do this on a daily basis, it will start changing your consciousness. But most importantly, when some fear of lack comes into your life, some financial fear or other fear, is to turn and to do this until it changes the way that you feel. To get yourself back into the feeling of the presence of God. And so the other important thing is you can't just do this a few times and then say, oh, it doesn't work. After you've done it 5,000 times, then tell me it doesn't work and I'll give you your money back. Because our tendency is when the fear comes up, and this is the way I used to live, when a financial fear came up, I would sit down, I'd start figuring out what am I going to do in the world to get more money. What I do today is if a fear comes up, I sit down in my meditation chair or I stand up and do some form of spiritual practice until I've gotten back into an awareness of oneness with God. And then the outer conditions change themselves. So instead of doing things out of desperation, now I do things out of inspiration. And that changes the whole quality of your life. So let me take you through this slowly now. And I want you to begin by placing both hands over your heart. And so first you take your left hand and extend it out to the side, back into the past, and say, I release my belief in lack. And now you extend your right hand out to the side, out into the future, and say, I release all of my needs. Now take and raise both of your hands up over your head and turn your head looking up into the heavens and say, I am grateful God. Now bring both hands back down over your heart and say, is the wealth I am. Now, what I need to say here before we go any further is this, that if you feel any sort of fear or trepidation when you say, I release all of my needs, then so much the better. Because the fear that you're feeling, you see, is your belief in lack. It is your fear of future lack that is coming up to be released. It is coming to pass, as it were. And so the appropriate thing here is, if that begins to happen to you, is to persist until you dispel all of that fear, to just do whatever you need to do to work through it. Because if you back off, if you chicken out, as it were, it will simply go back into hiding in your subconscious mind. Because it is that feeling, that fear, that is creating conditions of need in your life. Now, the same thing happens with this idea of wealth. When you say, I am grateful God is the wealth I am, that if you have any sort of uncomfortable feelings about using the word wealth in conjunction with God, then simply know that it is those feelings that are blocking your acceptance of abundance. Remember what we spoke of earlier, that wealth is the consciousness of abundance. So if there are unpleasant feelings that come up around that word wealth, that you simply have to work through them. And remember, when we talk about wealth, we're not talking just about money, but we're talking about an abundance of all good things in your life. And in those areas where money is necessary, it will be money. Where it's knowledge, it will be knowledge. Where it's love, it will be love. So the whole purpose of this prayer is to use your body to bring up the fears that have been holding you in lack and limitation, and then to continue to work through them with this process, with words of truth, until you have transformed that fear into faith.
So let's bring this all together now in the form of a little transformational chanting hymn and posture prayer performed by Reverend Suze Ogden.
I release my belief in lack. I release all of my needs. I am grateful God is the wealth I am. I release my belief in lack. I release all of my needs. I am grateful, God is the wealth I am. I release my belief in lack. I release all of my needs. I am